Hi, everybody. You are listening to another episode of Cloud and Clear. That's SADA's podcast, bringing you the best of cloud thought leadership for all of the enthusiasts out there. I am Miles Ward. I'm CTO here at SADA. Super excited to introduce my new friend and mentor, Juan Orlandini. Juan, say hi to everybody.
Well, hello, everybody. And as Miles said, Juan Orlandini, CTO at Insight. And I'm, you know, the weird thing is, I think you're my mentor. So this is going to work out like a beautiful thing.
Well, okay, look. So, you know, for everybody's background, SADA, you know, wonderfully was acquired by Insight just here at the beginning of December last year. And we are knee deep into an integration of these two businesses. And one of the parts and the opportunities of that I think is so compelling for so many of our mutual customers is a much more deep and thoughtful approach to multi-cloud technology. How do we approach the realistic, pragmatic experience of many, many, many of our customers who don't just have every single piece of technology they've ever purchased for all time from one vendor and one vendor only? Nope, you gotta buy all the tools you need from all the different places. So Juan, you know, you've been in this market way longer than me, man. You've been at it since the beginning. What, you know, talk to me about the kind of arc that you've watched with customers at Insight from the beginnings of cloud and in through to now starting to evaluate more than one. What does that look like for customers exploring these platforms?
Well, I think you said it really well by saying, hey, most customers are in a multi-cloud or a hybrid cloud or a hybrid multi-cloud model, right? And in fact, most clients that tell us that they are in a single cloud, if we start digging into it deeper, it turns out they're consuming multiple clouds. So you might be using a SaaS offering from like your payroll provider or a SaaS offering from an HR organization or any of those things. So I don't care who you are, you're probably in a multi or hybrid multi-cloud environment. So being able to meet all of those needs and making sure that we are helping our clients identify the right workloads for the right locations has really been instrumental in us really solving real world problems in the best way possible and getting the right outcomes for our clients. So it's been a lot of fun. And I got to tell you, I'm super excited to have you and your team be part of the offerings, because that gives us world-class capabilities across a wide swath of the workloads that clients are trying to consume.
Well, that's awesome. We're excited too. I think, you know, what I'm hearing back from customers is they just have a real need for the partners that they work with, for all the hyperscalers, for all the different vendors that they're consuming from, to recognize the reality of their situation, that customers are ever more complex and difficult to serve, that the commercial pressures in today's economy are what they are, and looking for the very, very most price performance efficient, most reliable, most secure, most efficient system that they can design is absolutely top of mind. You know, what, Juan, maybe let's pull up for a bit. You know, my job at SADA is to help our customers be successful with all of these technology options. You know, how does Insight think about the CTO role? What's your gig in this? What's your responsibility to help customers move forward?
Well, you're now part of our larger office of the CTO, right? And that really helps us. Yes, very much so. So the way we look at it is, depending on the geography that you're at and the part of the world that you're in, you're going to be approaching problems differently. So we have regional-based CTOs. So we have peers of ours that sit down in APAC, peers of ours that sit in EMEA, and here in North America, all right? And the intent behind that is to make sure that we have the right representation with the right geographical knowledge and industry visibility to service our clients as appropriately as possible, regardless of where they end up having to do these different needs, all right? And what we're finding out is that as a combined entity, rather than an individual that's got global responsibility, we're far better off than having this one Uber CTO that's supposed to have visibility across everything, because no human can.
No, we were talking earlier about just the like unbelievable flow rate of new API features, new product changes, new product offerings, you know, all sorts of businesses that you know, have worked one way, they're changing the context in which we have to give advisory to customers, and the business context in which they operate is changing more rapidly in 2024 than any other environment that I've been exposed to. You know, as you're thinking about accommodating that kind of change, and you know, and if you're looking at the pursuit of kind of a most efficient topology, I think one of the things I'm excited about in the new relationship with Insight is to be able to be as pragmatic as possible. They're like, I've been selling cloud. I think I've sold, you know, almost $10 billion in public cloud. Like, it turns out there really are some use cases where just buying a computer is a great idea. and like, well, having it, you, and owning exactly it, and right. Appreciating it, right? Like,
well, think about what we're using right now, right? So these edge devices. So we both happen to be using an Apple device, but this could very well be a Lenovo or a Dell or an HP device. And they're all amazing for their own reasons, right? You probably don't want to rent this, or you might. I don't know. We offer that as an option, right? But it's if you're in an edge location, say you're in retail and you're trying to do something as a QSR or a retailer of goods, you probably don't want to be dependent on a link to a cloud if you are in the middle of Arkansas and your retailer happens to be sitting in there with poor connectivity, right? I mean, you can't cloud without a network, right? So you better have a computer right next to where you're trying to do things. Or if you have some workloads that are really well understood and well managed and those kinds of things, and they might be old, crufty software that refactoring just doesn't make sense as a business, just buy your hardware and run it as well as you can. And we've been doing that for decades. We have a body of work that can run that incredibly efficiently. And you can still connect it to the rest of the world and all those things. So, yeah, it's very much so.
I remember this is at one of SADA's events. I'll see if I can find this video for you. We ginned together a demo. It was totally great because we'd heard exactly the same thing from customers. We're in kind of limited connectivity contexts. The local internet goes out all the time, and I can't be setting up a system like this. So we had a small partnership with the folks early at Starlink. Starlink actually backhauls all of their data into Google data centers. And using Google's Kubernetes technology, a thing called Anthos, we had one of my employees carry a bare metal server all the way up on top of Mount Washington, like they're at 6,000 something feet above the clouds, with a Starlink dish, with a battery, and I'm on a Google Meet to them, pushing new container images over the satellite to launch in their completely physically disconnected cloud installation way up there on top of a mountain. So if we can make it work in the middle of the wilderness with nothing for power, you know, within, you know, miles, you know, being able to do it in not only in the sort of distant parts of, you know, rural America, but talk to me about international deployments out on oil derricks, doing it in the backwaters around the world where people are putting rich sensor and gathering telemetry and getting new data. Like, those are the kinds of places where real end-to-end solutions that actually anticipate the complexities that real businesses deal with on a daily basis and don't present to them this like mystical hypothetical, you just need a couple of boxes up there in the cloud and everything will be work great, right? I really like that we're going to be able to be, you know, to be thoughtful about the actual challenges of doing this work in the real world.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things in that jump to mind. One is, in that instance, what you described as Google as the control plane with local autonomy at the far edge, right? Because if that Starlink satellite didn't pass or you didn't have enough coverage or whatever, that thing was autonomous. But when it came back and link, you could upload the data, reconnect, you know, all that good stuff. So control plane is one thing, right? But the other is the execution engine. And oh my gosh, is there a lot of change happening on that side, by the way. So we happen to have very strong partnerships with folks like Intel and AMD and Qualcomm and a number of the silicon manufacturers that are out there, including NVIDIA and all that. And the innovation that's happening in that space is unbelievable, unbelievable. We're probably going to see more innovation than in the next 18 to 24 months than we have in the prior probably 5-6 years. So it's going to be amazing, right? But understanding that, and really, and I'm going to use a fun nerdy word, grokking it properly, right? It's challenging by itself just at the device level. And then, oh, by the way, you got to do management of these at scale and then all the stuff. So it's an intricate, very nuanced conversation that we have to have in order to really solve the problem at scale. Not just a demo, which is fantastic, but solving it at scale and production, much harder.
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the places, you know, I think in the kind of multi-cloud debate and enablement conversation that I've watched with customers, and I'm interested if you're seeing the same, is, you know, one of the problems we're talking about, how do I support a rich edge? How do I make it so that I can do inference out there, do app serving out there, but streamline the data and be able to get better predictions, better downstream application design as a result of centralizing the telemetry in something like a cloud? That's one whole set of problems. There's a second set of problems, which is, like, say for ISVs, I need to run on all three of the clouds. It's the only way that I get access to customers that are located in all three of the clouds. You have yet another category that's businesses that are that are born by acquisition or have built themselves by pulling in other. They got customers that are internal users that are in every one of the environments. They got to figure out how to sort all of that kind of stuff out, the governance of that, and keeping those businesses operating independent of where they started is a management piece. And I think you have yet maybe probably the largest businesses in the world that are trying to figure out how to use multiple providers from a negotiating leverage standpoint. How do I make sure that I remain financially independent from these providers? If those are the kind of like the four drivers of this conversation, you know, where are you starting with customers? What's the first step as they start to think through, you know, how to approach careful governance of all that?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. We have this cloud maturity model, and you and I have spent some time talking through it. And there's many models out there, right? But if you look at it from the very basics, is when you first start onboarding to a single cloud or even multiple clouds, you tend to do lifts and shifts or operating in a model where you're more similar to what you did before than you are into the new capabilities that are provided by these independent locations. As you move into the next stage of maturity, you tend to start consuming more of the cloud primitives and operating in the CNCF definition of cloud native, which is all of the CNCF things that go into that, the 12-factor apps and all of those things, right? You start building teams that are a lot more geared towards that kind of operating model, where there's SREs and platform engineering teams and the DevOps teams and the business units and the FinOps teams and all that stuff that goes into that. So that's the next level of evolution. But you're still operating each one of the clouds independently, largely. You're not having single applications that are consuming resources or capabilities across clouds. And that's the next stage in the evolution that we tend to see with our clients, which is where you federate the clouds. And it could be federation for cost controls. It could be federation for resiliency. It could be federation for a lot of different reasons, right? Most customers are not there. We see most of our customers in the first stage of the evolution, a smaller subset. So it's about 65% are in the first stage. About 32-ish percent are in the second stage, and a very, very small fraction, like 2%. It tends to be the very, very large enterprises that have humongous IT teams, and I've been at this for decades at this point, that are really starting to do the federation. So so when we approach customers and we want to work with them, we want to understand where they are in their journey and how that happened to be. It could have been through acquisition. It could have been through deliberate or accidental decision-making. We had instances where clients didn't think they were going to be cloud, but then they told a dev, hey, I need a new app that does this, and they built it on the cloud, and next thing you know, it blew up and that became their business. And all of a sudden they're accidentally in the cloud, and that's happened, right? So we want to know how purposeful, how intentional, and where in the maturity model you are. And then we want to get to know where you want to get to, right? And be a good steward of their intent in helping them get there.
There's a chief economist from Google named Hal Varian, really brilliant guy. And his framing of this is that if you want to know the future, just look at what the rich are doing right now. And those huge, global multinational trillion-dollar mega corporations, they're rich. And so the kind of multi-cloud overhead and structural management and all the rest of that is something that they can absolutely see the ROI for over the time frames that they're planning on, right? It makes complete sense that you would go and make a, in some cases, billion-dollar investment to earn several percent leverage on the way that you use infrastructure and at the expense of the hyperscalers that you consume from, because you're using tens of billions of dollars worth of stuff for you and me and like my home lab that sits in the back trunk of my car. Like, it does not make sense for me to spend $1 billion to be able to handle multi-cloud management and operations. Very conveniently, the trajectory of the cost of technology goes down. So what we're watching is now the threshold for some companies. There's a bunch of different tools that help with this. VMware has great tools that work all over the place. The folks at Harness are starting to work through this kind of stuff. Terraform is a great example of the kinds of building blocks that are out there. Those tools are making it so that more and more companies can go, well, okay, that if that's the amount of advantage that I earn, and it's only that hard to sort of deal with it, some of the overhead complexity there for more than one, like, well, maybe that's worth it for me, right? Maybe that's a $100 million total infrastructure consumption account or a $10 million total infrastructure consumption account. And also another big lever for that we're watching is exactly what the ratio of nativeness is for their stuff. Like, we were looking right at the beginning of cloud, and as much as we focused on developers, the reality was 95 plus percent of computers were consumed by software that somebody either bought or they borrowed, not that they built. And so if that's the case, like, yes, all of the static structuring and the rest of that and the kind of built in at the software layer work for redundancy and availability stuff that would make it so that it can be somewhat difficult to coordinate high availability, for example, across public clouds. Those are the kinds of places where, conveniently, software has a life cycle. Like, I know no companies left that are just, dyed in the wool, super hardcore. The core serving data layer for them is DB2. Right, that's just all they have. They've standardized as a business. It's just DB2 all the way until the end of time. Nope. Like, they have somebody in the corner that's running MySQL. There's some weirdo over in the side that's got Postgres going. There's somebody that's running Alloy, right? Like, and as applications, commercial or not, right, already built by your business 20 years ago, 30 years ago or not, as those naturally age out, are replaced by more modern, higher performance, lower cost to serve, lower cost to maintain and keep secure. Those kinds of improvements naturally pull to the right the ease of use of these kinds of more straightforward deployment technologies and making it easier to be able to consume public cloud. So I don't think that's an instantaneous transition for any business. I don't know of no companies that have just like yanked the band-aid off and done it in 30 seconds, but I am definitely watching between the case studies that you walked me through on the inside side and the ones that we've done on the SADA side that this is absolutely doable now for lots of businesses, that they can earn real returns associated with exploring better tech for the way that they host.
So I'm a student of computer history, and at some point, you and I are going to nerd out on this stuff, all right? Because I truly can nerd out. Wait until you and I go to the Computer History Museum in San Jose, and
Oh, I
I'll
love
walk you
that
through that.
building. It's so
That
great.
place is amazing. This trend that you described is actually something that's not new, right? And that economist at Google, he was brilliant for the way he said, I say it a little bit more simplistically, all right? Because I like to think in simpler terms. When new technology comes out, cloud being a technology at a macro level, there's a box, and then you put PhDs next to the box, and that's how you manage this thing. It's literally how you do it. So if you look at Google, right, what do they have? Is they have PhDs as their operators, and they're inventing technology, right? If you look at any of the large enterprises, the very large enterprises, they have a box, and then they put their PhDs next to it. Over time, the vendors start noticing what these big smart people do, and they start baking the PhD into the box. And over time, you start needing less PhDs, right? And eventually, what you want to get to is where it becomes commoditized and it becomes a technology where maybe a master's or an undergrad or even a high school operator can actually do that. And we're in the process of baking PhDs in a lot of these things. And what we haven't gotten to is where we have the PhDs baked into the box that's a a federated cloud box. There is no such thing. You got to invent it yourself. All right. And that's why we see that trend is that most organizations aren't there because they don't have the PhDs to do it. Very simply put.
Yep, you got it.
Thank you for listening to Cloud and Clear. Check the show notes for links to this week's topics. And don't forget to connect with us on Twitter @CloudandClear and our website, sada.com.